This is the Dinner Party Download from APM. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Let's learn some etiquette.
All right. Each week, you send in your questions about how to behave, and here to answer them this time around is Mr. Alan Alda. He is, of course, beloved for starring as Hawkeye Pierce in what's widely considered one of the best TV shows of all time, MASH. He was a regular on another great show, The West Wing, and he hosted another great show, the PBS series Scientific American Frontiers, for over a decade. More germane to our conversation today, he helped found the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science at Stony Brook University. Its goal is to help scientists communicate better with the public, and his new book is about how we can all communicate better. It is called If I Understood You, Would I Have This Look on My Face? And Alan, it's an honor to have you on the show.
Hi, thank you.
It's going to be hard reading each other's faces since we're in studios around the world.
We are speaking to you from a different studio.
No, I can imagine your face, this won't be a very long conversation.
Oh, no.
You can see how vacant I am from there. This is upsetting. Look, I'm going to hop right into your book. You talk about how your obsession with communication started at the dentist's office.
Yeah.
And it wasn't laughing gas. Can you share with us what happened there? And
I had to have a front tooth taken out. And the only explanation he gave me before he stuck the knife in my face was, now there will be some tethering. And
tethering.
I said, what, tethering? Tethering. Well, he said, what do you mean tethering? He said, tethering, tethering. He started screaming. And that's all he said. It's like he was impatient with me because I didn't know what this common English word had to do with my mouth.
Sure. Yeah.
And what it turned out was he cut a little tissue up there that kept me from smiling normally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a man who needs your face.
I needed to smile sometimes. And then he sent me a letter designed to keep me from suing him. So he really was like non-communicative from the word go.
Sure. So this all, of course, makes you think maybe these guys should learn how to communicate better with people. And you begin your book with that anecdote because it's a story. And stories, as you also discuss in the book, are a fundamental way brains organize information. Why is that?
I have no idea. Who knows? I don't know. I always love it when somebody discovers something in science and says, and this makes sense because surely when we were prehistoric, we needed it for this or that. But you can make anything up that goes with that story because there's nobody around to test it on.
That's true.
Yeah. But what do stories do that, you know, captivate
well,
us?
Well, what they do, according to scientists I've interviewed who use functional MRIs to study the storytelling encounter, is they actually seem to sync up the brain in a real way. The brain of the person telling the story, say, for instance, of the story of a movie, when he tells it to someone else, her brain lights up or is activated in a very similar way to his brain as he tells the story. I think you could say we synchronize through story.
That sounds almost science fiction, almost, like we're mind-melding.
That's what I love about science. It's more fun than science fiction to me.
Yeah.
It is interesting, yeah, though. You divide your time between two very different worlds, the world of art and acting and of science. If you had to choose between the two of them, which would you pick?
Well, I'm an actor and a writer, and I don't think I could really be happy without doing art. But, you know, teaching is very similar to that. The more I run workshops and the more I try to help people understand what we're doing, the more I realize that it's a very similar process, and it's almost as satisfying. Not quite. But I did I acted in a web series with Louis C.K.
Yeah, Horace and Pete.
Yeah, and I had such a good time, and I respected that material so much. I haven't wanted to do anything that's been offered to me since then because it didn't seem to match up. So I guess maybe somehow that's the answer to your question.
Yeah, you'd rather be an actor as long as the material's good.
Yeah, right. That kind of matters.
Well, now you're going to have an opportunity to teach because we've let our audience know that you're here and they have some etiquette questions. Some of them involve communication. Some of them do not. Are you ready to help these folks out?
I certainly am.
Perfect.
Well, this first question comes from Roland in Los Angeles. And he writes, let's say someone way smarter and better qualified to talk about science than me is over for a party. And they're talking about science, but repeatedly mispronouncing a scientific term.
Oh, no.
Do I correct them?
Well, I've had this experience.
Oh.
And I didn't make the correction. I said, oh, is that how you pronounce the word? And he was embarrassed in front of other scientists. And
right.
I would suggest, not as a matter of etiquette, but as a matter of not being stupid, that it's not a good idea to correct an expert on what they know better than us.
That is true.
It's also a little bit passive aggressive, so that's a kind of a, that seems to be a theme in etiquette. You're saying, "Oh, is that how you pronounce it?"
Yeah. Well, I meant it. I think it was passive aggressive. I think you analyzed me correctly.
Here's something from Kylie via our website. Kylie writes, "My partner and I are aunt and uncle to more than 15 nieces and nephews, and we despair as we fail to get a thank you of any kind for any gift we send them. Our siblings also fail to thank us on behalf of their kids. How do we indicate that in these times of instant communication methods, thanks should be forthcoming? And how do we do this without offending these people? Or should we just give ourselves more gifts?
Give ourselves more gifts. I trampled on the gag at the end. Now, that's a good idea.
That's okay.
Yeah. See, I think it's, I feel the same way. I think I'm generous, but the one thing I want to return is a thank you, an acknowledgement that it happened. Maybe that's selfish of me, but that's what I want, damn it. So, there it is.
But, so what would your tactic be?
Here's a strategy that might work where you enlist the parents who themselves are recalcitrant, enlist them as magical helpers, you know, collaborators. What can we do to help little Mary learn that she should say thank you when she's given something? Because some people, like me, don't like it.
You're basically like, listen.
I like that.
Yes. I know that you're a person, sister or brother, who is a good person. Surely you want your child to behave well. Let's work together to make that happen.
Yeah.
That's a little formal for me. I do it like we're already cooperating on this great project.
That's right. You assume that they're on board.
Yeah.
Once again, a little bit passive-aggressive, right? Because you're kind of saying, you've raised these feral creatures.
I'm getting sick of this instant therapy here.
Yeah. We are mere radio hosts.
All right. That was just aggressive. Okay, here we go.
We got it. We get it, Alan.
We've had a breakthrough.
Okay, that's good. I can walk.
Here's something from Lindsay from Minneapolis. And Lindsay says, "My husband and I have season tickets to our Major League Soccer team. We often extend invites to friends to join us at a match, but we would like them to cover the cost of their ticket. How do we avoid the awkwardness of the, hey, want to join us for the match? Oh, and by the way, you have to pay situation."
Well, you have to put that up front. I have friends who do that. I have two extra tickets for sale. Can you use them?
You don't try to, like, underplay
that. If you want their company, then treat them. Otherwise, you've got tickets that are worth something, so you want somebody to pay for
it. But you don't want to seem mercenary. If you lead with the money, then it almost can seem like, I know you might try to weasel out of paying me, so I'm telling you now you can't.
No, you're honest. You're direct. Etiquette is not pretending to something that you're not going through. It's making the rails run more smoothly.
Precisely. It's like a social lubricant.
Yeah. I can't spring for these tickets for a person like you. How about that?
P.S. What do you think? I'm made of money.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you go, Lindsay. From Minneapolis, by the way, where they're known for just being very...
super direct.
Confrontational. So let's see how that works for her. All right. Our last question comes from Susan in Paoli, Pennsylvania. Susan asks, "Under what circumstances ought one refuse a nickname?"
This is an interesting question because it assumes that there are people coming up to you all the time giving you nicknames. I don't remember ever being given a nickname, you know?
That's true.
However, I did when my children were young enough to go to camp, a representative of the camp came to our house to tell us what a great camp it was, which included the information that every morning at 6 o'clock, when the lake was freezing cold, everybody had to take a swim in the lake. And then on the first day, everybody would get a nickname that would stick with them for the whole time, and it would be based on some feature of their face or their body or something like that, like, hey, Freckles.
Wow.
Hey, Hook Nose, you know. I said, thanks very much. We won't be giving our children into your care.
That's a nightmare. It's like basically we're going to haze your child. Are you ready for that?
Wow.
Let's do it.
Yeah. I think when somebody starts nicknaming you, if you don't like it, you tell them.
Doesn't that then make it, oh, you don't like it? Well, then I'm just going to nickname you even harder.
Well, then you're talking to a bully. Then you got to bring the bully apparatus into play.
Which is?
Sock him in the puss.
There you have it. Etiquette.
This is etiquette, right?
There you go. Susan and Paoli, as I call you, Susie Q. Thanks for sending in your question.
And Alan Alda, thank you so much for telling our audience how to behave.
Yeah, well, they need it.
Alan Alda, ladies and gentlemen. His latest book is called If I Understood You, Would I Have This Look on My Face? And Rico, consider my bucket list checked.
Yes, we have long wanted Alan on our show. But ladies and gentlemen, we've got many other thoughtful folks on deck to help you out. If you have an etiquette question you need addressed by a famous person, send it in. Head to dinnerpartydownload.org and click Contact.